You've been listening to Record of the Year at Random. All the rights cleared with the copyright holders concerned. Copyright Radio 6 International 2004. Record of the Year at Random is a Radio 6 International production.
Radio 6 International.
Around the clock and around the world, this is Radio 6 International, broadcasting on 5105 kHz from the facilities of WBCQ in Monticello, Maine, and on the internet at radio6.com. It's midnight GMT, 7pm Eastern.
John Kavanagh and I have come here on a rather snowy day into the Pennines because we're intrigued. In fact, we have been intrigued for quite some time now. If you're a regular listener to Radio 6 International, you'll know that there are a number of bands whose names pop up with, well, almost monotonous regularity. Names like The Rabbit's Hat, Body Full of Stars, Cromlech, Somebody Famous, to name just a few. And all of these seem to have in common two people who, as it happens, live here, Tim Jones and Terry B. Yeah, I know, you've heard of them, haven't you? So we thought today, just for a change, instead of having our usual Friday John Kavanagh album show, we'd find out who Tim and Terry are, whether they really exist or whether they're just a figment of our imagination, and what makes them tick. So, Tim and Terry, thank you for inviting us. Inviting us, we just forced our way in with a crowbar. But here we are in Stone Premonition Studio, where all these great recordings have been made. And I suppose the first question is to Tim, because it's, how did this all start? How did you come to be? How did the two of you come to be here in the middle of darkest Cumbria?
I thought you were going to say nowhere, Tony.
Making all this music.
Yeah, middle of nowhere, yeah. Oh, God, it's a long story. It's actually the 10th anniversary of Stone Premonitions this year. That's the official anniversary. We started up properly in about 1994 out of a one-bedroom flat in Reckington near Gateshead in Newcastle in the northeast of England. And what happened was we thought that if a collection of bands or musicians work together and pool equipment and expertise, then they could all help each other to promote each other's music, and they could also appear on each other's recordings, so therefore you could have sort of a wide selection of talent, if you like. That was the plan, as a kind of a cooperative, really, although it was never set up officially as a cooperative. That is in effect the way that we've worked, you know. Is that
that sort of answers some of the question, but why? I mean, this is a small town. This is a very small town, and it's not the most accessible of places in England.
No.
So why here?
Well, as I say, first we started off in the northeastern conurbation if you like.
Reckington is more accessible than Alton.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And so access was much easier, and it was like Grand Central Station back there, because people could just call in any time, regardless of who was recording, and people would quite often be in on other people's recording sessions, just sitting in, you know, or having a drink, whatever, and ending up singing or playing guitar. But eventually it kind of takes over your life to the extent where you need to get a bit of your life back. And so we'd always wanted to live more sort of in the countryside, really. Terry especially, didn't you? You are here,
yes,
aren't you?
I am here.
And so we got this opportunity to live out in the middle of nowhere, so we took it. The thing is that as long as we have access to the internet and we have a post office, we can literally do what we do anywhere. It means that we have to be more, our organisational skills have to be better, because we have to organise recording groups of people. They come up here kind of en masse, rather than being able to just have a continuous process on a daily basis. So it has changed the way that we work.
But Stone Premonitions isn't just a recording studio.
No.
It's everything. It's making the records, it's designing the sleeves,
yep.
It's printing them, it's reproducing them, it's putting them into the boxes, it's distributing them and selling them.
Yeah.
Do you just do your own bands, or do you do this for other people? How does it all work?
Originally, it was just for the sort of Stone Premonitions collective, which consisted of about, say, five bands. The first band that we had our own band when we set up Stone Premonitions, which was called The Rabbit's Hat. But the problem was, especially at that time, 10 years ago, studio costs were still very expensive. So we thought the way to make it cheaper was, again, to be as a collective, so that if everybody's putting whatever they can in, it gets cheaper to record. So I'm veering away from your original question.
Veer away.
Yeah. The thing is that once we started to get involved with the promotional aspect, because we'd been in bands where you just have the one band and you do the one thing, you don't really branch out, you just go out, do live gigs, if you're lucky get a CD out, and then it sort of falls apart after so long. But this is a kind of continuous process, and so there was no label as such, but we weren't really a label, so we had to follow that kind of aspect and do the promotion ourselves. So it just it evolved organically, just through sheer necessity, in that people wanted their music heard first and foremost, not to make money or anything, just for somebody to hear it. So we then had to find out names and addresses of people to send the music to, and all of a sudden we discovered this huge international scene, which is called, I suppose, the Underground Alternative Music Network, which is truly international, and where DJs and writers form a movement which is truly worldwide.
I hear in the background the Air Force are coming to
get us. Of course, we have our own landing strip.
Yeah, I'm conscious of the fact that perhaps some of the music is not to the taste of the establishment. So I'm just hoping that they don't have
monitoring us at the moment.
The plot here. One thing that does fascinate me, though, is this idea of the kind of interchangeability.
Yeah.
Of the bands, because all the bands I was talking about at the beginning, you know, you and Terry seem to appear in all of these, but the rest of the members seem to be kind of mix and match.
Yeah. Well, the thing is that there are two.
Time.
Yeah, yeah. that's what I was going to say, Terry.
You live here.
Yeah, we live here. Tim does the recordings. I do the artwork. So if anybody needs a backing vocalist, I'm here for that. If anybody needs a bit of twiddly guitar, Tim does it.
Yeah. So really, that's what became apparent, because Terry,
you're the house band.
Yeah, we're the session players. But Terry does a lot of sort of arts and crafts and this, that and the other, and she had been doing that for a long time. I mean, we started off, when Storm Premonition started, it was as much about Terry making clothes and making mats and doing markets and things like that, you know. So Terry kind of what's the word, there was a metamorphosis went on where she started getting into computers, especially PC technology, and it became easier to produce your own artwork. So once CDRs came in, that was the real revolution. I mean, there's a bunch of cassettes over there. We started off, we did about 20 different cassettes. That was the medium at the time. But when CDRs came in, that was the real sort of revolution, because the quality just went up, you know, dramatic.
And because it was equivalent to being able to press your own vinyl.
Yeah.
Because the cassette was always an
inferior. Cassette was a cheap option, yeah. Really, but it was and we used to use multi-track cassette machines. But the thing is, I found out that no two cassettes have the same dynamic response. You would never, and cassette machines were, cassette multi-track machines were notorious for mechanical failures and all kinds of different, you know, it was a difficult medium. But then as digital technology became cheaper, especially you know, for recording digital multi-tracks, first the ADAT player, which we used to use, which was like high band VHS tapes, and then now you've got like machines over there which listeners can't see, but it's basically a digital multi-track. A thing that used to take up a room this size now is a small unit. So Terry could do bands' artworks, covers, posters, this, that and the other. I was a sound, I had learnt through necessity to be a sound engineer. None of the other bands were sound engineers, so somebody had to do that job. So the reason that Terry and I are there on most of them is because it's the kind of centre of activity. The studio just happened to be based in our house. We used to have a house with a studio, now it's more a studio with a house attached to it.
Tony mentioned a few of the names of the bands. Yeah. What's your differing levels of role in those different bands? Give us an overview of that.
Right, well, for instance, if you mentioned Cromlech. Cromlech are an entity in their own right. Terry does quite a few sort of bits of vocals here and there, and I do the engineering, but that they write all the stuff, they record all the stuff. They're a gang that became a band. I think they're great, and we.
You're biased.
Yeah. I was originally employed by a community project which was set up in concert in the northeast of Durham, that had a big steelworks. The steelworks closed, and a guy called John Kearney, who very sadly died last year, managed to get £8.5 million out of a Tory government for a project to set up for recording and community arts. And they employed me to work with bands. That's how I met Cromlech. And we used to go around places like Seaham and, well, all over the northeast. Their project was
that's one with the sort of lunar beach, isn't it?
Yeah, it was in Alien.
Yes, they used it in the film, didn't they? It looks like some orange craters or
that's
something.
That's right. Yeah. They needed a real desolate-looking place, and they ended up with Seaham. I think it was somewhere near Seaham. But Northern Recording, John Kearney was brilliant, a real sort of innovator. He was actually the regional education officer for Derwentside, and he had this plan, and there was a whole load of out-of-work steel workers that got together and formed this thing, and then employed other musicians in the district, and they paid them very well. And so that's how I met them. I met other bands through Northern Recording, but there was Cromlech. Then what we decided to do was, there is a regional newsletter called The Generator, which is still going from the northeast, and we put an advert in there looking for bands with a similar kind of philosophy that wanted to get involved with a similar kind of project. They started replying, and we got in touch with a band called Mr. Quimby's Beard, who have actually done very well in their own right and are now a separate entity. They've got their own label called Freaky Fungi. They've been to America and toured America and everything, and become quite a big space rock band, Friends of Hawkwind and this, that and the other. But they veered off into a specific direction because they're space rock. But we don't want to really be genre specific. If something's good, then you know we'll be involved with it. It doesn't matter.
You feel you need to use different names yourselves because one thing, let's just say Rabbit's Hat, wouldn't cover all the different styles that you want to play.
Well, there are different lineups for each band. None of Cromlech are in Rabbit's Hat. The members of, say, if you take the two main bands that Terry and I are in, you've got the Rabbit's Hat and Census of Hallucinations. We write the material for those, and we also sing and play various instruments in that. But the rest, like the drums and bass and keyboards and things, are played by other people. Mm. So Body Full of Stars is an entirely separate entity. Most of that music is written by a consultant psychotherapist called Mark Dunn, who
that explains a lot, really. Yeah,
who has done all kinds of things. Really, he's the type of guy that goes to Mexico and visits like shamans, and buries himself in sand up to his neck and everything. Goes to wild drumming weekends and all this kind of thing. He's a real philosopher. Body Full of Stars came out of a childhood band that we had that was actually got signed to a record company, which was amazing at the time. We left school, formed this band, got signed, did two singles, and became a tax loss. Many years later, we reformed and did some recordings under the name Body Full of Stars. So you're talking about altogether about between 30-40 different musicians.
You see, you mentioned this band that you used to be in.
Yeah.
And there's rustling going on in the background here because I've got a bag here.
Right.
And
Mr. Cavan never goes anywhere without his bag.
you actually have the thing.
That is for radio, of course. You have to describe this object.
My God, this is the first Neon single, 3-track EP, which was on.
It's in better condition than the one
I've got. You know, this would cost you £20 now. These are I've seen them on eBay.
We can make a profit out of this program.
That's amazing. Yeah. So it's weird looking at this because we were like 18. It's a picture disc, and now there's an interesting history here because really this band, the real force, musical force in this band, was a guy called Paul Addison, who now lives in New Zealand. He became the stage manager for Pink Floyd, and he has worked with Santana, Bob Dylan, David Bowie. He's an incredibly talented guy who now has a company. It's like a mobile studio based in New Zealand, just called The Mobile. You can find out about Paddy at themobile.nz, in fact. Mark Dunn, who is the bass player, he became a psychotherapist. Now, when I look back at this, we used to say, God, imagine Mark sorting people's heads out for a living. You know, because we people were quite mad in those days.
Where?
So, and then there was me, who was the black sheep of my family. And the only thing I could ever do was music, and I had N million different types of jobs, you know. But that's great. Does it still play?
It plays very well. I think we should hear some of it.
Go to hide away. not old, they're all dead as well, they're all dead as well, they're all dead as well. In your eyes, come as no surprise, come as no surprise, come as no surprise. The rising cost of your arms agree, they agree, they agree, they agree.
Sex International, Tony Curry and John Kavanagh with Tim Jones and Terry B in Alston and Cumbria, playing music there from 1978, Tim, when he was not but a wee laddie, and the band called Neon, and then there was, you see, this is a, I keep opening up this bag and showing things,
my
and
he's God, got to describe both? Them. Wow, now here we go, Punishment of Luxury, yes.
Punishment of Luxury.
Yes, Punny Luxury, short, well, hang on, wrong one, Revolution by Numbers. They made me wear a ski mask, an umbrella hat, all kinds of weird stuff, dark glasses. You couldn't tell. The whole idea was people had sort of stage names, Neville Luxury, Steve Secret. Mine was actually Tim Magenta at one point. Forget how we came up with that. But Steve Secret I'm still well involved with. He's a brilliant
but in
drummer.
A secret kind of a way.
Yeah, but yes, yes. The thing is about these, this
shh,
there is
not supposed to know that.
There is a tragedy attached to these two. I originally, Punishment of Luxury had a singer called Brian Bond. Nate Reagan was his original, was his proper nickname. It had two powerful forces in it, Brian Bond, the singer, and Neville Luxury, Neville Atkinson, the guitarist. Neville Atkinson was a true innovator, was a genius as far as I'm concerned. Should have gone on to be a huge star. I mean, the guy exuded talent, was an amazing guy, all round, just amazing. But the problem was that they had a vinyl album which was quite successful called Laughing Academy, which was on United Artists, and it was a major release. They also did 8 vinyl singles, I think it was 8. Problem was that the band started to get quite political, and the band itself with Neville Atkinson was dropped by United Artists, but Brian Bond, the singer, was kept on by the publishing company, which was called Screen Gems EMI. Now, I joined Brian Bond's band after he left Punishment Luxury, and when I was in that band, I was in them for a year, we toured all over the place, and I thought, this isn't Punishment Luxury, what's this about? And eventually I kind of fell out with Brian and that kind of whole scene that it was at that time. And the day I left, I got a phone call from Neville Luxury saying, oh great, you've left Brian's band, come and join Punishment Luxury. The same day. And when I joined Punishment Luxury, I realised where the real talent lay, which was in this amazing band. Now, they had recorded a couple of albums that United Artists refused to release and EMI refused to have anything to do with because they felt they were too overtly political. And then these I now have in my hands, which were released years later through Overground Records, and they're now distributed through Voiceprint. And this is amazing stuff. I mean, all mainly written by Neville Luxury. I'm probably veering off the point here, but in the Tyneside Theatre in Newcastle, I heard there was a meeting between Neville and Brian Bond, who had fallen out really, really badly. And Nev said to Brian, how about we bury the hatchet Nev, and Nev said, yes, Brian, I'll bury it in your head if you like. That's how bad it got. What a tragedy. The other thing that didn't bode well for Ponylux, just before Brian left the band, he threw a bucket of rotten fish all over the audience, the first two rows of the audience at a gig in Germany, and it went down like a lead.
Went down like a bucket of rotten fish.
Rotten fish, right. Yeah. But it's really interesting to see. They're great albums. Revolution by Numbers and Gigantic Days.
And I think we have to hear something from one of these, do we not? Punishment of Luxury, and we're in Austin, and we're talking to Tim Jones and Terry B, and the we is Tony Curry and John Kavanagh, and this is Radio 6 International, around the clock and around the world. And around the world we have been musically for some time, because the music of these two people does go far and beyond the confines of this room. When it comes to the large number of musicians that you have operating with you, how much does that fluctuate? I mean, are there new people coming along all the time, or have you kind of stabilised a lineup of people that you are now working with regularly?
Do you want to answer some of these questions, or am I going to... Usually, you know, it's terrible. We do interviews, and I hog the whole thing. And then Terry will speak. I'll think, right, shut up. I want to... Then she'll say something, and I interrupt her again.
You answer this one.
But Terry always says to me, well, you speak. You be the spokesman. As I said before, these days, people, it's a bit of a trek. Say we're sort of 40, 44 miles from Newcastle or Durham or whatever. People have to travel. Through, and so, but in actual fact, we met a whole scene here in Alston. There's a great venue down the road, the town hall. We get quite sort of, I mean, John Otway is playing here soon. We had quite a few bands from all over the place playing here. So we've recently got involved with a musician called Roland Caceres, and we're about to do some. He lives in Alston, and we're about to put out a few tracks by him. So we just meet people as we kind of go along. But we're still very involved with the people in Body Full of Stars, the people in Cromlech, etc., etc. Paddy is now in New Zealand, but because of the wonders of modern technology, we can just send CDRs back and forward to each other, and we actually record together even though we're in different countries. So it can just carry on via the post.
One of the most recent releases coming out of here is an album credited to the band or person, somebody famous. I'm not quite sure whether somebody famous is meant to be a band or is just Tim.
It started off as a solo project.
But on that album are some vintage recordings. There's lots and lots
yeah.
of bits of stuff going way, way, way back.
Yeah.
So I kind of presume from that you've been actively making music actually for a very long time. Some of that album is actually stuff that goes back to university days, I think.
Yeah, the thing is that when I was a kid, I actually grew up my teenage years in Dundee in Scotland. The education system in Scotland at that time, I don't know whether it's the same now, it's a long time since the school, but was entirely different from English school. I came down to the English school system. I got into a grammar school, and it was terrible. I hated school in England. I hated the whole streaming sort of system that I was in, and I wish that I could have continued at the Grove Academy in Dundee, where I used to go to school. I loved that school. We even had a committee that where school pupils could go and take complaints, where we could discuss things. It was great, very open environment, fantastic. That's how I discovered music in the Boys Brigade in Dundee. A guy called Fergie, who I will always remember, taught me to play guitar, you know, old sort of folk songs and that, loads of kids sitting around in a circle strumming guitars, all singing the same song. Came down to England, it was tragic, but Fergie taught me to play the guitar. I sank myself into music. I ran away from home when I was 16 to join a band, and that's where it was. The only music gave me, playing the guitar gave me respect for myself when I was having a real tragedy in my life. I was a bit of a sort of messed up kid in a lot of ways. My father was away working abroad a lot of the time, and so music gave me something which was just so important. I can't describe how important that was. And so, that, yeah, as music was from my first days away from home, really.
You have email.
I left home to join a band. So I sacrificed a lot of things, because I was supposed to. It was education, education, education. My father put a big emphasis on that. Both of my brothers got good degrees at university and did well in their respective careers. I always felt like a square peg in a round hole, but music gave me the thing. So I just pursued it. That's what I've done, really. You know, drop out.
And at what point did you and Terry Become acquainted.
Quite a few years later. Me and Terry have been together for 12 years. You want to say? You say something, Terry. Go on.
Terry is here. Terry is sitting beside me and is just nodding and smiling at most of this.
She's I was working in a bar where Tim's band came to play. I was working behind the bar, serving drinks. And at the age of 29, I'd only just discovered that I could sing. And I was in a band too. We invited Tim to come and rehearse in our rooms that we had for rehearsing, and that's how Tim and I got speaking to each other.
And I couldn't believe it, because I knew Terry was a singer, but I knew her as an upfront sort of rock singer. She was in a heavy metal band called Vagrant, with all the gear and all this, you know, jumping about and stuff, two lead guitarists doing all the twiddly bits and everything. But what happened was, I found that Terry had this talent for harmony, and you can give Terry as many tracks as you want on a recording machine for harmonies, and she can build a whole choir of, and that for me was a real education. I was used to being in three piece bands, being singer, guitarist, etc. But Terry opened up a whole world for me with harmony. So it meant that when I was singing a vocal line for a song that I'd written, Terry would embellish it, and all of a sudden the colours would just be there. And that's what you hear on recordings that Terry's in. She has a real talent, totally self-taught. She can pick harmonies out there, just amazing.
And I'll see you in a while. You love me so deeply, and I always knew I won't forget what I meant to you. I have so much to do before we meet again. Many days of rain, many days of sunshine. Please keep on smiling, your beautiful smile, for we'll be together again in a while. The good times we had never leave us. And no one will ever steal them from me. I have so much to do before we meet again. Many days of rain, many days of sunshine.
She also has a great voice for solo, but the voices together, I think that's what works.
So they do solo stuff.
Yeah, you're shaking your head here when Tina says you've got a voice
like
for
doing
solo.
Lead vocals on her own.
I haven't got the confidence. I like something to rest on.
Yeah.
If you're doing a harmony, you can rest on somebody else, and you know they're the one that has to have all the responsibility.
Yeah. But Terry also learns really quickly as far as the sort of PC technology and recording to PC, etc. Terry learned that first. She in fact does voluntary work in this area to help people that are having problems with their PCs, and she teaches people basic IT technology and stuff, and she taught me all of that. She learns things first very quickly, passes them on to me, and then I do all the dog's body work.
Would you say the two of you are both on exactly the same musical plane in terms of the music that you like the most, that turns you on, that you like performing, or do you think you're actually in slightly different camps? Because I mean, Terry, you've done the things like the album of Essential Incense Music, mm-hmm. which is very it's very kind of new age, it's very ethereal, it's ambient.
I'll tell you what it is. Me playing about on a computer. I did not take that seriously.
I'll tell you what that is. That's far too honest.
I started work in a shop up the street here that sells a lot of incense, and I thought, there's an opening in the market here. You could have a CD to go with this incense. You could put it next to the incense.
I'm so pleased to hear this, you see, because I was worried that you might be a little too ethereal. But because, I mean, to a large extent, the bottom line of most of Tim's music is rock. It's
yeah.
rock oriented. Yeah. And but I mean, if you were singing in a heavy metal band, you're a rock chick as well, Terry.
Not really.
No.
Well, she was.
It was just something to do to pass the time.
The thing is that this place, the King's Head, where we met, was an amazing venue. We couldn't believe it when we first got there. It was on the circuit for like northern gigs, and it was just an amazing place. It was full of all these raunchy, like you say, raunchy rock chicks and this, that, and the other. It was great, and it became a regular sort of thing. So, but Terry also can play like bits of classical piano and all of this kind of thing. She has many, and she's a very talented person, but she doesn't. But also very, very sort of down to earth, you know. And
I notice Mr. Kavanagh is fumbling in his magic
again.
Well, I don't have any more surprises of the neon and Punnilux variety, but I was thinking about the harmonies, about the quality of the voices on your records.
Right.
But it's not just form over substance. There's a strong lyric thing there, quite a lot of which is politics and some yeah. quite strong stuff in there too. So
yeah.
tell me about the motivations behind these songs. And I'll rustle in my bag to get the next thing I want to say.
Right.
Because I've got something here I do want to ask you about. Found it.
Well, the thing is that I actually, one of the things that really bothers me really is the injustice in the world. There's a hell of a lot of it about. It's staring us right in the face, and they say that the best place to hide anything is right in front of your face. And it's become so blatant. I mean, all we have to do is turn on TV, radio to see it's happening now. You know, the Hutton report, the forthcoming Butler report, the war that we went into. I mean, when people are talking about who was to blame, oh, it was the Defence Secretary, oh, it was the Prime Minister, oh, it was the press or whatever, what people forget is that thousands and thousands of children died in the most appalling circumstances, and they're still dying in Iraq. And, you know, I voted for the Labour government. I voted for Tony Blair. Nobody asked me if I wanted to blow up innocent women and children. And I am absolutely appalled. So music is a medium where you can, I think, successfully carry a political message. That's the challenge, if you like. Because you don't want to sort of preach, but you do want to say to people like, hey, you know, isn't it about time we opened our eyes? Take power back. We need to take... It's us that empowers these people. We can't blame anybody else. It's all down to ourselves, you know, and that's what it is for me.
But it's also that balance of, as you say, not preaching, that you've got you've got a message in there, but you've also got the lighter touch and the fun side of it too. And I'm looking at one of the albums here, a Census of Hallucinations record called The Eighth Dwarf.
Yeah.
And that has one of the best titles that Tony and I have seen in some time, Weapons of Mass Deception. I think that's a, as a great
yeah.
pun.
Yeah.
You've also got things on The Eighth Dwarf, Five-Sided Pyramid, and looking at these titles and the decor around the place, I see pyramids and eyes. I've even heard mention of the language of Atlantis.
Yes.
Now, would I be right in surmising that there are fans of the writings of Robert Anton Wilson?
Oh, yeah. I've read The Cosmic Trigger, yeah.
And the Illuminati stuff.
Yeah, you see, the thing is, you get into the problem is that as soon as you call somebody a conspiracy theorist or a conspicuous theorist, is there other good words, I think, to describe them, it's a good way of making nonsense out of something that might have some basis in fact. Should I tell you what I believe? I believe that Tony Blair is not in charge of this country. I don't believe that Bush is in charge of the USA. I believe that there are, if you like, men in the shadows who call all the shots, who print the money, who own the banks. I mean, the very interesting question. I mean, conspiracy theorists, they come up with this one. Over there on the computer, I've got a dollar bill. And on the dollar bill, there's the pyramid with the eye in it. And basically, the slogan, if you like, on that dollar bill is, I can't quite remember the Latin, but it basically says New World Order. This has been, I believe it's been a long-term plan. I don't think that things happen by accident. I believe that we are manipulated by people who understand things that we wouldn't even dream of. We couldn't even dream of the technology, for instance, that is out there for warfare. And God forbid that we should ever have to encounter it in our lifetimes. I mean, they're going out into space next. And, you know, rather than having to they're just going to be able to drop bombs on people from outer space. Whoever owns out there in space rules the Earth. And I think this new technology, I mean, why the hell does Bush want to go to Mars? You know, we can't even sort out Ethiopia. There are people starving to death. There are people living in Ethiopia on wild cabbage, a diet of wild cabbage. They've never even seen a fish or a chicken. They wouldn't know what meat tastes like. You know, people are starving to death all over the planet. He wants to spend billions to go out there. What, so we can spread this disease to other places? I think we need to sort ourselves out down here first.
These are the bigger global issues,
yeah.
And these are the things that point to an empirical culture based on that kind of power.
Yeah.
But of course that ricochets all the way down the line to make a monoculture for what you listen to in music. That's the attempt to make the mainstream the monoculture,
yeah.
To have smaller and smaller numbers of large-scale corporate people,
yeah.
Controlling the music you listen to, which is why,
yes.
The underground and things like what you do become increasingly important. And I think in the last few years the underground has become much stronger.
You can watch it happen weekly, you know, daily. I mean, I'm amazed at the way this whole scene is getting bigger and bigger all the time. And that's why Radio 6 and broadcasters like yourself and Tony are so very important to give people a voice. You do a fantastic job in the amount of encouragement and you know, you help people to actually make their way to feel like they're actually achieving something, because these people are not going to get any airplay at all on the mainstream stations. You know, if anybody has a point of view that is going to question these days, I mean, especially in America, I think these days it's getting worse than here, although they want to bring in new laws and everything. But what I was going to say at the beginning from what you just said, which I agree with, is that world peace starts in your own backyard. And I think that if we're really going to change anything, we need to change as individuals and change that whole corporate structure. We believe in it. We support it. We vote them in. You know, and yet we feel powerless. Because they make us feel powerless, we just let it happen, rather than taking our own power back. And that is so important with music. I'm a musician, so therefore it's got to be through music. And you're absolutely right in that the underground movement is not about money. It's not. If it was about money, it's just pointless. You know, at this stage in the game, you know, it depends what you want. You know, it really does depend what you want out of life.
You mentioned the word mainstream there, though, John, and the question now arises, particularly if you look at the current level of sales necessary to get a number one hit in the UK, or indeed to get a number one hit in the US, is what actually is mainstream? And I think that, I mean, what you're talking about, and, you know, it's kind of you to say nice things about Radio 6, but all we're doing is we are one small voice in the wilderness, but one of many small voices. And since there are now more and more of these voices, all of them being heard faintly, but the faint whispers all still can build up. And I think the crucial part of all this is the internet. Mm-hmm. And the fact that it is that thing that joins us all together, and that allows an alternative voice, perhaps an alternative politics. I'm not into politics, so I don't know, and I'm not particularly bothered about that side of it. I'm more bothered about the fact that the people whose lives are devoted not to making money but to making music, people who are motivated by wanting to express themselves through music, should find a means of getting that music heard. And I think that's probably the only political statement that we have to make, is that what we're into is creating an outlet for all kinds of music, for your music, for Betsy Foster's music, for Lucy Webster's music, for all the many different kinds of music, Frank Englert. What it does bring us to, though, is the notion that we were talking earlier before we started recording this program, we were talking about the fact that Radio 6 perhaps lives in a sort of alternative universe where we have everything but none of it is Madonna.
Yeah.
And you know, and where we have food to eat but none of it's McDonald's.
Mm-hmm.
But I wonder at what point either of you feel, or John, you feel that we may be beginning to tip the scales in a direction that mainstream doesn't mean anything anymore, because there isn't a mainstream or a substream, there isn't an underground or an overground. Mm-hmm. that it all begins to level out somewhere.
You see, what I think you're talking about is freedom, and I think that is so fundamentally important. You're talking about freedom of expression, and to be able to express yourself, not for reasons of making money, but for artistic freedom. I think that people, if they can't express themselves, that's the root of a lot of illness, I think. Dis-ease, you know, what is disease? You know, it's the two words put together, dis-ease. People are not at ease with themselves, they're pent up with frustration, they can't, you know, if they have no outlet to express themselves. And art is so important in that. But now, as the curriculum becomes so sort of geared to that kind of industry, for that corporate culture, you know, that people have less and less chance. You know, they need to make money to stay alive, and they're not going to do that through art.
And here we are, Tony Curry and myself, John Kavanagh, for Radio 6 International, round the clock and round the world, in Alston and Cumbria, with Tim Jones and Terry B, the people responsible, for the music that you're hearing in this hour. Rabbit's Hat, I've been featured on my album show in weeks gone by, and tend, musically, if perhaps not always lyrically, towards the more wistful side of what you do. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that have bubbled nearer the surface of, if not the mainstream, then certainly the public consciousness, would you say that's been your most successful banner to work under so far?
The Rabbit's Hat is based around songs, specifically songs that are written around an acoustic guitar, really, most of the time, with at first two vocals, Terry doing harmony vocals to a main melody. Senses of Hallucinations is more experimental. It's important to us that we have both, because we don't just do the straight songs all the time. But when we go out and do gigs here and there, it's basically with an acoustic guitar these days. You don't have to carry PA and gear and all of that, and literally we can play sort of anywhere.
Could pass yourself off as a folk act.
The Rabbit's Hat also, people have asked us about the name. It's a strange thing, you know. I got myself confused quite a lot over what the hell the name meant, or how did we come up with the name. But if you imagine the magician, if you like, a magician pulling a rabbit out of a hat, then the hat is the domain, if you like, and the rabbit is the idea. So you have to keep on pulling out magically musical ideas out of the hat every time, because it's not, say, it's a conjuring trick, but you have to keep that interest coming. You know, it's no good just having one good song. You've got to keep on coming up with a good song.
clock and around the world. This is Radio 6 International, broadcasting on 5105 kHz from the facilities of WBCQ in Monticello, Maine, and on the internet at radio6.com.
Radio 6 International.
Around the clock and around the world, Radio 6 International News at 0100 GMT.